Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. IVEST. I'm the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today, we are going to talk about an oftentimes forgotten album by the Red Hot Chili Peppers called One Hot Minute. Released September
12, 95. Yeah. It's interesting you said that because that's, I kind of do feel like it is sort of the forgotten one.
Yeah. It's their animals.
I would ask. Yeah, it's their animals. Yeah. It kind of, you know, in a weird way. Sure. But I would ask you, Grim, do you feel like this is sort of an underrated album? Sort of like almost kind of like you just said a little while ago, like a hidden treasure a little bit, because it's got some moments on it, man.
I think like, so. When I think about it, some of my favorite, at least, yeah, I'm going to say some because there's at least two of my favorite Red Hot Chili Peppers songs overall are on this album. And I think it just gets a bad rap because of the fact that they had a personnel change. And after Frusciante left midway through the tour, I think it was 92, and then they got done and they settled on hiring Navarro, Dave Navarro, yep, who had just come off of Jane's Addiction as the guitarist. I think it gets a bad rap because of that. And I get it, because there's something about a band with what you consider this classic lineup. Now, one can argue that I guess Frusciante would have to be their classic lineup guitarist, but he sure as hell wasn't the first. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who would argue that was Hillel Slovak.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, I think for me, it is sort of like a standout album. I think it's, to me, it is sandwiched also between my two favorite Chili Peppers albums, which is Blood Sugar and then Californication. Now, with this album, I feel like they had a lot of things working almost against them. And, you know, we've talked about this a little bit for other bands, like we just did Blur, how they kind of made that sort of left turn a little bit. Sort of, you know, bands can produce really good work when they have their backs against the wall. But here's the deal, man. Dave Navarro, it wasn't just the addition of Dave Navarro into the band. It was also the subtraction of John Frusciante, who is a great songwriter and a primary songwriter.
True, right? True. And also should be noted that the addition of cocaine and heroin into Anthony Kiedis's sort of life again probably didn't help either.
Probably didn't. No.
But he does kind of address it in a lot of the lyrics, which
he does. And he doesn't shy away from it. No. So that's good. But also, dude, at that point, you're kind of searching for an identity. There is some sort of a, I would say, pressure of following up a huge album like Blood Sugar Sex Magik. And also think about this, though, dude. Think about how much the musical landscape had changed.
Oh, between 91 and 91.
And then this is what, 95.
Yeah.
So like, dude, the whole grunge period literally peaked within that time of them putting out albums. So this, I mean, dude, talk about sort of like not only an identity crisis, and not that as, you know, a band or musician, you're like, hey, well, we're going to conform to what's popular or anything. But, dude, there was a lot of things changing and going on at that time.
Well, and whether you quote unquote conform to it or not, you're probably going to be influenced by it one way or another. That influence could be pushing away from all of that, or it could be partially incorporating it or going all in. I feel like this is really more of a partial incorporation. And as I read some of the reviews of it, I normally, if there's a review that really pisses me off, I will be pretty vocal about it. I guess I get where they're coming from here. And I want to say, like, I get it. There was a lineup change. It was a difference in sound, but it's still Red Hot Chili Peppers. There's still a ton of funk influence. And I still hear that more than anything else. Yeah, there might be songs that have sort of a more hard rock influence.
Guitar, yeah.
But dude, Navarro, I came from more of a rock sort of background, so to speak, than what they were making before. So how is that not going to show through? Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's bound to, But I still think, dude, think of some of the, Airplane.
Aeroplane.
Aeroplane. Walkabout. One Hot Minute. Falling Into Grace. Like, a lot of those songs have some serious funk in them still, too.
Yeah. So, and we'll talk about this maybe a little bit when we get into the tracks. I do think it is an unfair criticism to say that, you know, the funk just like went out the window. I think they really meshed those forms probably as well as you could. I think there are points in some of the songs. There's certain spots and transitions where I feel like they maybe tried to force the funk in there a little bit. You know, and then there's some songs, there's a couple of tracks on the album that definitely are, I don't know if they were maybe like Dave Navarro pleasers, but they are heavier, just yeah. like songs. And I think of them like that. But dude, when I was listening to it again, and it had been, dude, I couldn't tell you, man, it's been a while since I listened to this album.
More than one hot one.
It's been a while since I've listened to this album as a whole. And I would say this, I would say overall, I think this album has a lot of great individual tracks and great moments. I don't know if as a whole, all the songs mesh together in like one cohesive album. There's some songs on the album that I absolutely love. And at the same time, I could say, wow, if you took out this one and this one and this one and this one, man, you could have like the outliers would move aside. And I think the album would be a little more cohesive in that sense.
That's fair.
Which, you know, that will obviously get to our scratches at some point, but that's kind of how I feel about it. And it's hard to, you know, yeah, take out this song and this song and this song, but this song does have some interesting outliers that I don't know if they fit as well within the album as a whole, but I still love the tracks on their own.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's interesting too, just to note that this is their second collaboration with Rick Rubin. But I think that knowing that you were going to have a different element with Navarro in the group, you can definitely hear it in everything to me about the way the guitars are recorded and the way they sound. But according to Rubin himself, he has zero technical expertise, so I would put that on the engineer anyways.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Yeah,
he just gets paid for having really good taste.
Man, I think I can do that. And, you know, let's go for this sound.
And bringing out the best in people, I suppose. But anyways.
It does.
So recorded in L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I heard and there was friction from within the band. I mean, dude, anytime, you know, you take someone out of the band, you bring in somebody new, you got guys, you know, a group, three core members who are used to doing things a certain way. And even Dave Navarro had sort of issues with the way they recorded. And he was kind of questioning, like, why they jammed so much when they were conceiving songs and conceiving the album. And even that just started friction in the band. Navarro also, he wasn't used to collaborating as much on tracks.
Yeah. Like
the Chili Peppers are a very collaborative band instead of, hey, you know, oh, I'm going to go out and, you know, go off on my own. I'm going to come up with some tracks and some demos and some songs and whatnot, and then bring them back, you know, and we'll work it out. It's like, no, it's kind of like, yeah, we're going to sit in the same room and we're just going to mess around and play and see what we kind of come up with. That just different styles are.
Well, you know, yeah. And there. I think he came, I mean, it noted it, at least in the Wiki article, that coming off of Jane's Addiction, that was like the Perry Farrell show.
Yeah.
And you were just along for the ride. You just happen to be the dude that played guitar. So, yeah, that's probably something that was both good and bad, because he could have a little more input into what goes on. But at the same point, you know, there was probably, like you said, a perceived lack of direction.
Yeah. Now, I was happy with the amount of information that there sort of was.
Yeah.
Out agreed. There about
there's some album. Albums now, dude, that are a lot bigger albums and you get literally nothing on.
Yeah.
It's now, just like, dude, this happened in history.
Right. Right. There's actually, though, there was a documentary on this era and this in the recording of this album. And it was, I believe it was called Deep Kick, but it's never been released.
Oh,
now, you can see you can see if you watch the music video for My Friends, you can see they take footage from sort of what the documentary would be of them just like in the studio playing and everything. Oh, yeah. and whatnot. And I guess you can find parts of it online. Now, I would love to know if it's like out there, there's a bootleg copy, and super fans, if you guys know,
yeah,
this,
if you
like,
know, definitely do the thing,
definitely let us know below where we could find that. Because, dude, now there was one on Blood Sugar Sex Magik, which I would highly recommend if yeah, people haven't seen one. That is exceptional. Like, dude, that's, I mean, I love just seeing the band in their element. Like in that one, you see them in the house and they're recording, putting tracks down, like they're banging on what the draw of the garbage cans and everything yeah. for when they're doing Breaking the Girl. And I mean, dude, just the great behind the scenes footage.
It's
of that
funny, too, really just like neat. Watching them play like Nintendo. You yeah, know what like I mean? Like when you see they yeah. got like a Nintendo and an old shitty tube TV and yeah. watching the Lakers and shit, like, but who wouldn't do that in that situation? It's sort of like the real life aspect of it, but it's funny. Absolutely. You're like, this is like a big rock band. They're playing Nintendo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in 91 though, let me do Nintendo, man.
For real, still, like probably Tecmo Super Bowl was probably just coming out. It was,
dude, if not Tecmo Bowl,
was kind there, of a big game.
Kind of a big game. Get stuck on Legend of Zelda, man.
Fucking just play Contra.
Contra. Damn.
Surprised they didn't do the code.
I think this might be a good point. You know, we can get into tracks, but I think overall, dude, I mean, would you say though that this is sort of like, I feel like this is the forgotten album.
Yeah.
Right. Like almost like
nobody
people don't
talks
even,
about it.
People don't count it. They don't even play songs from the show really live. I think they might play Aeroplane, but I think I read that. Yeah. They won't even play it live. And, you know, Chad Smith even said when he was asked like, oh, why don't you guys play stuff? He's like, you know, we really don't feel a connection to that album.
And that sucks because there's some songs like
some good
we'll get into them. But like I remember being a kid and there was like, oh, this is the new Red Hot Chili Peppers song. And it was Warped. And I was like, dude, shit, whoa, that's awesome. Like, I yeah. loved it as a kid, you know, and it's too bad not to play that because there's some really good material there.
Yep. I'm with you.
So
I guess we'll get into the tracks. Track number one, Warped.
We just kind of touched on it, but to me, this is a departure and much more of a foray into heavier rock. I think it's awesome, though, but it is.
It definitely is. I mean, it's definitely harder, but and the groove is definitely more intense. You can definitely you can tell that. But at the same time, man, I really feel like it has these kind of funky elements and does show a progression in the band. I guess there's a part of me, I don't feel like it's a departure, but it's not like, dude, we're not talking OK Computer to Kid A, man.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
I, you know, it's not like I heard this and was like, what the hell is this? Like, I mean, it didn't catch me off. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I will say there are some things that they did. You know, even with his vocals, like they talk about like even it has more of like a trippy kind of like psychedelic feel.
Well, they put it in a round.
Okay.
Like the delay is so much that at that point it's almost in a round because as he's saying the word, like the what he said last time was repeating, and the way he kind of comes in and with that vocal effect he has, yeah, it is real kind of psychedelic and
yeah, it's just. Yeah. I know we were getting in the tracks, but man, it was really good to listen to this one again, man.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it had just been a while. It's been a while. God, what a horrible song that is. but, all right. Track number two. I like where the spike with pain and music is my aeroplane.
It's my aeroplane. Surprised this wasn't the second single. Or even the first, because to me, if you were expecting a band to sort of progress but still have that Chili Pepper sound, this is that song.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I remember this is, I mean, I know I remember my friends, but Aeroplane was like,
I think it was the most Warped popular was, single.
Yeah, even though Warped was the first one, Aeroplane was the one that I specifically remember like hearing on the radio a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Dude, now it was funny, man. You know, the kids in the back.
So yeah.
Like it's yeah, dude, that's Flea's daughter's kindergarten class singing the background vocals.
That's
pretty sweet.
So awesome.
Right.
Yep.
But, you know, it's a good song. I think it has a good mix of the funk and the rock. I mean, I think they were trying to figure out how to strike that balance a little bit almost throughout this album. And that's what I think, like, sometimes I think it kind of fights.
Oh, you know, absolutely. They're
fighting to find the balance.
And, but this one, I don't hear the fight in. This is definitely...
This one strikes it. It's also, dude, it has these nice little, it's got nice little funky... you know, middle section, the guitar isn't like overly harsh or in your face or anything.
It's more like what you'd expect. Yeah, I agree.
But dude, to me, the line, I mean, it's like the classic line, dude. I like my pleasure spiked with pain. Music is my Aeroplane.
Like, yeah.
That MF's always spiked.
With yeah. Pain, yeah. You know? That is,
I mean, dude,
and it's so sweet. Cause if you only listen to the radio and stuff and didn't have the album, or the single, you didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You didn't know that motherfucker.
Is always spiked with pain. Now, we go to track number 3, Deep Kick.
They're four and a spoken word. I didn't hear any of the critics talking about that.
Yeah. I mean, dude, just dropping bombs.
I wondered too. Now, granted, the timing doesn't line up, but with the way that some of those passages are written that he's speaking, it was like I wondered if he got those from Flea's book Acid for Children, which was about like their upbringing and how they were kind of wild kids and stuff. And
it could be. I know Anthony Kiedis is definitely like a he's a writer. You know,
yeah, we got a writer those, here.
Yeah, we got a writer here. You know, this one, I can see people being like, OK, what the hell's going on here? You know,
yeah.
just with the intro, I can see why people would be like, this is weird. I'm not sure what it is. The song also, I mean, just on this album has 3 songs that are over 6 minutes.
And well, yeah, that's like, it surprised me when I realized it was over an hour long.
Yeah. But. You know, so he basically just kind of does this spoken word thing for the first like minute and a half of the song, and then it just like rips, and it's just like it in your face. And I feel like that is sort of the Dave Navarro influence. You know, it's got a lot of energy to it, good background vocals, which is. Now, Frusciante does a lot of in the past he did a lot of their vocals. You can tell a lot of these are Flea.
Yeah. Now and I was going to say, when Flea sings at the end, it is not great.
Yes, it's not. Flea, we love you. You have one of your greatest moments on this album.
Maybe this is ever. Yeah.
This is not it. But I will say one of the lines is pretty cool. But the Butthole for Surfers said,
yeah,
it's better to regret something you did than something you didn't do.
So, yeah.
This one's a little iffy now,
I hear you say that you think it has that Dave Navarro influence, but think about the way that comes in. And then think about, for example, like the way Get On Top comes in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a different sport.
Yeah.
Not even a different league, really.
No. Just as Jules Winfield.
Or conference, for that matter. But anyways, I digress.
City. All right. We go to track number 4, My Friends. This was the second single. I find this to be an interesting transition going from Deep Kick into this track. That in itself, that transition feels a little strange. And there's even this slight little crossfade too.
Yeah.
That goes right into this. Now, go ahead.
I was going to say, this for true fans of Red Hot Chili Peppers, they might not like this, but dude, this is probably one of my top three songs by them.
Yeah.
Dude, it's such a great song. Like everything about it, it's just perfect. It is an excellent song. I like it. It's the perfect range for his voice.
Dude, the production, the acoustics sound so good. I think they double it on each side and each,
yeah,
each
they do.
Ear, man. Ugh, it is just, yeah, go grab it.
Yeah, I was because there's the part that, to me, the part that really does it is when you go on that C and you go, mm-hmm. You know that. Open D chord is really, anytime I hear that in a song, I think that's an incredibly nice touch. And it really is in here, because those open strings fight with what your brain says is like the context of that chord. And it works really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that overall this song does. It has, again, a sadder, melancholy kind of feel to it, but without being sappy.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I love sort of the story, and it tells a little bit of, dude, I love, ex-girlfriend called me up alone and desperate on the prison phone. They want to give her 7 years for being sad.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's just, dude, that's sweet, man. And then at the end, I heard a little girl, and what she said was something beautiful, to give your love no matter what. And this is one of my favorite songs. Here's the thing. When I first heard this song on the radio, I was like, I need to get this album.
Yeah,
I
remember,
like, this is, dude, again, what was this, 95? So I'm like 12, 13 years old. Don't have a whole lot of money back then. And I was like, I need to go to the store and buy this. And it was like one of the few CDs that I ended up like going. Like, I remember specifically my mind being like, I need to have this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was because of this song.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it made probably, if not one, probably I'm sure it made Mellow Mix one, but it might have made like subsequent iterations of the Mellow Mix Burn CD series.
You think so? Yeah.
It may have, yeah.
It could definitely happen. All right. Track number 5, Coffee Shop.
Meet me I at love the coffee shop, girl. Iggy Pop reference in here. That's great.
Absolutely. This is always, like, again, at a younger age, this one really always stood out to me. It's catchy. It's just the way he sings that.
But to me, it's a little more rocky, too.
It does. Yes. Yeah. I mean, something about it, the beginning of this track, did you just reference Get On Top? I
think
Yeah, something about the beginning of the song reminded
me of
that.
There's several times where, like, the way that certain songs of theirs hit and the rhythmic sort of devices that they use remind me of Get On Top.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to say that they're in any way a copy of it, but that's just like a feel that they have, and they do it very well.
They definitely do.
They're very fast.
Now we get to the peak, the pinnacle,
dude,
of the album.
I'm a little bee. I love the sky and the trees.
Best song on the album. I mean, can we just, no, not to be a spoiler alert, but come on. I mean, I love My Friends, but dude, gotta be the best song on the album.
Track number 6, P.
It's so great.
It is, I have, you know, this is one that we always played when we were kids and we just laughed our asses off. And I played it again today and we were just talking about it. And again, we laughed our asses off.
It's great.
And it's,
dude, it's so funny.
It's weird. Any other band could not get away with putting this type of song on an album. The Red Hot Chili Peppers can get away with putting this type of a song on the album, man.
Well,
like,
yeah, I guess, because he plays really well. Not that it's overly complex, but plays really well. And I just love that it's just him.
Dude, just those words, man. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's like, I think if another band, like, you know, I mean, we'll talk about, like, I mean, now Pearl Jam can have a song like what, Bugs, right? And
STP, you know, with like, Wet My Bed.
With Wet My Bed. Like, there can be some weird songs, but man, this one's pretty awesome. And it's not trying to be anything more than it is. But dude, so it was written about, I guess he said, written about the guys who beat the shit out of me at the Mayfair on Franklin and Bronson. So he's like specifically referencing some sort of event in his life where he just basically got the shit beat out of him. And I'd be curious to know, like, when in his life that happened. You know, are we talking like, was he just a young kid? Was he like at a bus stop, you know, like when he was a teenager or something like that?
Yeah.
Or,
and he probably looked a little like, you know, weird,
a little weird.
And, you know, you get your people now that would no doubt be open carrying, because why wouldn't you?
It's my right.
Yeah. It's their right. I mean, not to mention that you're just a fucking moron, but, yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting, I didn't know that story, but it pretty much makes sense.
Yeah. Now we move on to track number 7, One Big Mob.
I am you, are me.
Yeah, this one's definitely a heavier song.
Yeah.
I think they do mesh the styles, but I think it's leaning a little heavier towards Navarro.
Yeah.
Then in the middle, man, it gets a little weird. It gets a little weird with, like, I don't know what it is. It sounds like this strange sound of like a baby or like an animal like crying or doing something, and it's like put through a filter, but it sounds kind of fucked up. But they had that really kind of, it's just like this long trippy sort of middle section. And they put, again, like his voice sounds, I say psychedelic. It's got this trippy sort of like filter to it.
That's
and everything.
Not the one where Navarro's using the talk box.
No,
that's, no. Is that Shallow Be Thy Game?
No, that is, I'll know when I get there. Cause I, oh, it's Falling Into Grace.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Yeah. We'll get there. Okay.
Yeah, we'll get there. But yeah, this song is definitely interesting. Again, one of the longer ones at over 6 minutes. But dude, this song, it's all over the place, man.
Yeah.
Like, they have these little parts where they have like nice little harmonies and background vocals and they sing, and then it gets all weird and then it gets heavy. And so anyways, it's all over the place.
Yeah,
One Big Mob, oh yeah. track number 8,
Walkabout.
Dude, this is, now look, people are saying that there's no funk on this album. Like, dude,
correct.
Come on, man.
Like, I disagree, mate.
Yeah.
And this is proof of that one. Yeah. And I like the lyrics too. I mean, it's just kind of,
yeah, it's pretty cool. I like the way he sings it. You know, he's able to change his voice and his flow, really, really well. Now this song, and I imagine this song was before Beck came out. Is it Deadweight where Beck uses the straw?
Oh, that's not a straw, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The straw sound, right?
That sound. Yeah. I think this would have been before or right around the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what was, I don't know what your Mutations was, but I know that song came out.
Well, I think that was actually between Mutations and Odelay, because it was on the Life Less Ordinary soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, it's cool. That's in the song, and I think it's kind of a fun little part. But, man, if you want funk, man, dude, this song has got it.
Yeah.
It's got it.
It does.
You know, the one thing I will say about it is the guitar solo that Navarro plays, again, I don't feel like it fits.
No, it just feels
forced to me. And again, that's where I was kind of talking about. I'm like, sometimes they're just,
fight a little. I agree. I absolutely agree. So, and that is a really good call out.
Yeah. Track number 9, Tear Jerker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did not know this was a tribute to Kurt Cobain.
Yeah.
Reading the lyrics, it made a lot. It just seemed like a love song because you hear him say, you know,
you're backstage in a dress. Yeah.
And then you start thinking about him like, yeah, I'm sure Kurt Cobain probably played a lot of shows like wearing a dress.
Oh, dude, I think if you look at the liner notes for In Utero, I think it shows a picture of him backstage in a wheelchair in a dress. Yeah, and he said you looked a perfect mess like that kind of.
Exactly. But then it's like the one lyrics that I guess I never attributed because, I mean, like women can have whiskers.
It's, oh, it's yeah. But, I didn't think it. I guess that did always strike. That struck me, too. And I was like, boy, if there was one thing I was going to notice about a woman, it would not be that.
Actually, never mind. I wouldn't even say I'd probably notice it and I'd be like, oh, OK. Like, you want to use my razor? Anyways, yeah. But I do like the way he says, I like the whiskers. I like your whiskers and the dimple in your chin. Yeah. And then he says your pale blue eyes, which Kurt had very, I guess.
Piercing.
I don't know. Piercing. That was the word I was looking for. Piercing. Track number 10, the title track. One Hot Minute. This song, again, I think this is the other one. It's the third one, almost 6.5 minutes.
It is a long one.
It's weird, man. It starts off like very disjointed. Like it's just like trying to find its footing and whatnot. And then, it is a heavier song. I feel like it is
a little
pretty
more
much
on that side.
Yeah. And I feel like it doesn't. I think the song. I don't feel any funk in this song. I feel like it is purely just like weird rock. And then they just kind of transition like 2/3 of the way through and it slows down and then it gets heavy again. It's just, I just feel like it's kind of like this hard rock song. That's just kind of a weird song, man.
Yeah. I dig. I agree. But they do bring the funk back in track 11, Falling Into Grace. And I like how, and it's funny because the bass is more like the melodic thing instead of just holding down where Navarro in this case has his guitar and he's using that talk box to just make the weird sort of textures.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we all know how fantastic of a bass player Flea is, and they put his bass playing a lot of times more to the forefront, but it's definitely there in this song.
It's moving it along. Yes. One thing I wanted to note that I don't think was ever called out in anything I read, but nobody gets credit for the Mellotron and Falling Into Grace, Tearjerker. I think Tearjerker. Where they have the Mellotron, and it's just a really nice touch for a song like that. Cool. Anyways.
So back into Falling Into Grace, there are these parts that have that na 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 na.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's interesting because I feel like that's a very signature Red Hot Chili Peppers sound. But it's weird because Dave Navarro's playing like I feel like that's not Dave Navarro, and that's like feels strange.
Pulls it sometimes toward rock, I think you kind of got to go the other way too and just understand what the dynamic of the band is and kind of what their sound is.
Yeah, something felt weird about it. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. So something was just a little strange about it, but it's cool because I like that sound. So.
Yeah, I dig.
All right, Grim, track number 12. Shallow Be Thy Name.
I love the
game.
Great name. To me, this is an interesting one that it was released as a single.
As a single.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember this one as a single.
Yeah. Very funky intro, though. I'll tell you that, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is an interesting song. I mean, obviously, dude, he's you know, just rip it. It's like, Flea, hey, go have fun and come up with a sweet bass line.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'll just do that in my sleep. But it has a real big sound to me. In a strange way, I actually feel like this song could belong on, like, By the Way or Stadium Arcadium.
Yeah, I can hear that. Yeah, I can hear why you would say that.
I think it is because it does exude that sort of just big sound in a way where not as intimate maybe as, I don't know. Californication is just such a, I don't know, man, such a great, unique album. I feel like it doesn't have like that type, this type of a song on that album, but I can definitely hear it on By the Way or Stadium Arcadium.
Yep.
But dude, this is the song that I think after re-listening to it, which it had been years, this is the song that really stood out to me. And they sound like a really tight band in this track, and they really mesh well together. So, then we go to the last track, track number 13.
Kind of, I would definitely, and the title would also imply this, but this, you know, there's talk of these psychedelic sort of influences. I could hear that in this song.
Dude, it kind of reminds, I think it's the Velvet Glove.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, it kind of gets into that groove a little bit. Right? It does. But, dude, apparently, I think Flea wrote the lyrics to this, and he wrote it as a tribute to River Phoenix passing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, dude, I did read
that's pretty interesting, man. And I really like it, man. I think it's a great track.
It was weird to me that it ended the album because I didn't feel like the album was going to be over.
Yeah, and it takes this 180 like halfway through the song, and it just gets really intense, and I'm not sure if I really love that. I kind of wish the song would have stayed on this smooth groove that it's on.
Love it or listen,
and,
man.
And they flipped it.
They fucking flipped it. Listed it.
They listed it, man. They listed it, dude. So that wraps up going through the tracks there, Grim. Let's figure out what one we're gonna scratch. But also, before we get into that, and I think we might be in agreement on this, I imagine, since you said it was in your top three, I imagine My Friends, is that your favorite track off this album?
Oh, tied with P.
Oh, okay. Well, duh.
I mean, that's obvious. Yeah. Yeah, that to me.
The gold standard.
But My Friends is definitely one of my favorite Chili Pepper songs ever, which seems probably kind of weird, but.
But it's that badass. You know? It's that badass. So
yeah, some people like the James Bonds with George Lazenby. Not many, though.
No. Few and far. Few and far. All right, well, let's get into the tracks. And I think we should go with like one hot minute. We should go with like a hot poker or something like that. Anything?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. One hot poker.
One hot poker. Are you going or am I going?
Do that vinyl.
You want to go?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Drop it. Drop it like it's hot.
Well, despite the content, which is in retrospect and reading it a lot more meaningful than maybe I would have thought originally, I'm still going to scratch Tearjerker.
Ooh, okay. Okay. Is it just too, like, I don't know, sad? Do you feel like it's cliche? Like, what's...
No, I think it's a fine song. It's just... and in a lot of instances, that kind of stuff works for them. But for this song, or for this album, I just... It's just kind of an outlier.
Yeah. No, I can...
For me.
I can understand that. I can understand that. I'm not going to throw it out there. So... I myself, dude, I'm going to go with One Big Mob. I am, you are me. I am, you are me. Who? I am, you are me. I am, you are me. It's...
Oh, yeah. It's, I get that.
You know, it's, what, 6.5, 6 minutes, and it's pretty intense. It's got this weird middle section. Like I said, it's got like
it's
this
kind of one big cluster.
Yeah, it kind of is. Man. I mean, dude, this track is, it's 6 minutes of like just kind of like all over the place. And, you know, it does have some nice individual elements, but I don't feel like it all comes together in this song. So it
doesn't really tie them
it does
together.
Not tie That's them fair. Together.
Well, I'm not throwing it out there either. Okay. I definitely get it.
Yeah.
So, but I guess let us know what you would scratch below.
Yes.
And why. And if our scratches are crazy. And what do you think about this being either the turd that shouldn't have been or just a great album that kind of was forgotten about?
Yeah. So slipped through the cracks. Is it the is it the forgotten album and should it be remembered? Right. I mean, or
should they re-record it like Roger Waters did?
Dark Side of the Moon, yeah.
Or maybe just Dave Navarro should actually re-record the whole album. Like,
if
it'd be like, you know, they just didn't have enough of my influence in it.
Maybe if Kiedis and Flea and Chad Smith would just stepped aside and just let me do my thing, you know, dude, maybe Dave Navarro can record it with Roger Waters. And
yeah,
I think, you know, that would be, it would be interesting. I'd listen to it once.
My friends are so depressed.
Oh, they are so depressed. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. It is time to go.
Time to go.
On the Dew in the Grim.
Scratch of Track is produced by the Dew and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Tings. Copyright 2023, The Dude and Grim Show.